We always hear stories of Samson fighting the Philistines and also King David. But who were these people? And where did they come from and when? Today we will look at who these people were and some of the great stories that they are involved in from the pages of the Bible and also a little bit from history. The word Philistine was rather a generic term, meaning sea people. The Philistine nation didn't truly begin to form until the time right before the judgeship of Deborah, which is actually mentioned in Judges chapter 3, verse 31, when Samgar first had to deal with them. So who were the Philistines of Abraham's time? Well, the first mention of the Philistines is in Genesis chapter 10, the Table of Nations. And speaking of Mesram, the son of Noah's son Ham, in Genesis chapter 10, verse 13, it says that Mesram begot Ludim, Anamim, and a few other people. And it comes down to, and then Kelusim, from whom came the Philistines, and Kaphtorim. Now again, that could have been changed later once they became known, but that's the first mention of the word Philistine in the Bible. Now the next mention is in Genesis chapter 20, when Abraham moved south to Gerar, where King Abimelech is ruler. Now what is remarkable about this account is it happens after many significant things in Abraham's life. He rescued Lot from his captors. He even gave some tithes to Melchizedek, which was a pre-incarnate Jesus. And he even saw Jesus when he visited him with the two angels before sending those two angels off to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And once before, he actually deceived an Egyptian pharaoh about his wife being his sister only, as she was his half-sister, but was also his wife. Now he does it again with Abimelech. After all those things that he went through, he does it once again. I tell you, Sarah must have been a real beauty for him to be afraid that they were going to kill him and take his wife away from him. But after that event, when Abraham came clean with Abimelech, who was really upset, Abraham made a covenant with Abimelech. And then shortly after, Isaac was born. In Genesis chapter 21, Genesis chapter 21, verse 22, and it came to pass at the time that Abimelech and Pichol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, God is with you in all that you do. He recognized that. Now therefore swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me, with my offspring, or with my posterity, but that according to the kindness that I have done to you, you will do to me and to the land in which you have dwelt. So Abraham did so. In verse 32, thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. So Abimelech rose with Pichol, the commander of his army, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. Then Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there called on the name of the Eternal, the Everlasting God. And Abraham stayed in the land of the Philistines for many days. Of course, this is referring to the land of the Philistines, which was much later. Now, years later, Isaac is now dealing with the king of the Philistines, supposedly. Now, Genesis chapter 26 and verse 1, Genesis chapter 26 and verse 1, there was a famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, the king of the Philistines, in Gerar. God told Isaac to dwell in that land. But like father, like son. In verse 6, so Isaac dwelt in Gerar. And the men of the place asked about his wife. And he said, she is my sister. For he was afraid to say, she is my wife, because he thought, lest the men of the place kill me for Rebekah, because she is beautiful to behold. Now it came to pass, when he had been there a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked through the window and saw. And there was Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah, his wife. Then Abimelech called Isaac and said, quite obviously, she is your wife. So how could you say she is my sister? Isaac said to him, because I said, lest I die on account of her. And Abimelech said, what is this you have done to us? One of the people might soon have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt on us. So Abimelech charged all the people, saying, he who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. See, the people had better than normal standards, for they were also against adultery. Isaac renews the covenant that was made between their fathers, which is important on a little bit later. It is very important. Yes, many scholars believe that Abimelech of Isaac's time is the son of the one of Abraham's time. The name Abimelech means father slash leader of a king, or my father slash leader, the king. Therefore, they believe Abimelech is more like a title for a king, kind of like the Egyptian pharaoh. So who were these Philistines, supposedly, of the patriarch's time? Well, rabbinic sources state that the Philistines of Genesis were different people from the Philistines of the Deuteronomistic history. Deuteronomistic history is a series of books from Joshua to 2 Kings. According to the Talmud, the Philistines of Genesis intermingled with the Avites. The Avites, or the Avim, which is plural, of Philistia, are people that are mentioned in the Bible and also in related literature. Their name was first used in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 23, in a description of the conquest that had taken place in the land of Israel during the Israelite sojourn in Egypt. The passage relates that they were conquered by the Kaphtorites, who usurped their land. Deuteronomy chapter 2 and verse 23, and I'm reading from the New International Version. And as for the Avites who lived in the villages as far as Gaza, the Kaphtorites, coming out from Kaphtor, destroyed them and settled in their place. Joshua 13, verses 2 and 3 mentions that their land was considered part of the Canaanite land yet to be conquered by the Israelites. Verse 2, Joshua 13, it says, this is the land that yet remains, all the territory of the Philistines and all that of the Geshurites, from Shihor, which is in the east of Egypt, as far as the border of Ekron northward, which is counted as Canaanite. The five lords of the Philistines, the Gazites, the Ashdodites, the Ascalonites, the Gittites, and the Ekronites, also the Avites. The Talmud notes that the Avites were Philistine people in the days of Abraham. They were some of these sea people, earlier sea peoples, but they weren't the same as the Philistines. The Philistines actually came and they conquered the Avites and took over their land and their people and their religion as well, as we'll see. The Talmud explains that originally the Israelites were not entitled to conquer that land of the Avites because of that oath that Abraham and Isaac had sworn to Abimelech. That's why that was important. But that this oath no longer applied after the captorites had destroyed them and took over their lands. This view is also reiterated in Rashi's commentary on Deuteronomy. Rashi is the medieval French rabbi and the author of a comprehensive commentary on the Talmud and also a commentary on the Hebrew Bible. Now, the captorites are believed to be from the island of Crete, but may also be from the island of Sardinia, as a group of the sea peoples actually migrated from Sardinia to Crete and Cyprus, and they spread out all over the Aegean Sea there in the Mediterranean. They seem to have been part of these sea peoples. From other ancient sources, we even know some of the names of the other sea peoples, like the Cycles, the Shurden, the Danunu, and the Weshish. The Bible seems to refer to all of them as Philistines. Again, Philistines is more of a generic title for all these sea peoples. However, there are many critics that dispute God's word. Unbelievable, right? They don't believe in the Bible. And they say that the Philistines never existed. And these same critics, they also believe that King David never reigned in Israel. They don't even believe that King David reigned. Well, the Philistines and the other sea peoples were mentioned in other history books and other sources other than the Bible. They mention in the Egyptian writings of Ramses III. And much of what we know about the sea peoples is it actually comes from some other Egyptian documents. The first is the Onomasticon of Amenope, which is dated around the end of the 12th or beginning of the 11th century B.C. It refers not only to places like Ashkelon, Ashdod, and Gaza, but also to the peoples like the Philistines, the Cycles, and the Shurden. From their place in these lists, it seems that the Cycles and the Shurden controlled the central and northern coast of Canaan, possibly the region that was going to belong to the tribe of Dan, as we'll see a little bit later here. Now, the sea peoples first appeared in the eastern Mediterranean in the second half of the 13th century B.C. At the time, the Egyptians and the Hittites were in a power struggle in the Levant. The Hittite Empire was actually centered up in Anatolia. Anatolia is actually another name for Asia Minor, which is now, of course, Turkey. But both were very weak from their struggles back and forth, politically and militarily. So these sea peoples actually exploited this power vacuum by invading areas that were previously subject to Egypt and Hittite control. In a wave after wave of land and sea assaults, they attacked Syria, Israel, and even Egypt. They were constantly defeated by the Egyptians and the Israelites as Shamgar battled with them, which is mentioned briefly in Judges chapter 3 and verse 31. But Shamgar may have not been an actual judge, since Ehud was still the judge at this time. But the Philistines eventually got a foothold in the southern coastal area of Israel, known today as the Gaza Strip. In the land of Israel, the Philistines established five large and prosperous cities all located in the southern coastal plain: Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, Gath, and Ekron. These cities are often referred to as the Philistine Pentapolis. They all have been extensively excavated, except for Gaza, because of the modern city, Gaza City, which has been in the news here lately, is built right on top of the ancient city, so they haven't dug through a lot of the excavations to see what's underneath there. Now, these excavations, together with others nearby, reveal a material culture that was both rich and unique, reflecting its origins of these Philistine people, were similar to those from Greece and Cyprus, as well as some of the other Aegean islands. Now, again, the famous Philistine Pentapolis consisted of the following major cities: Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, Gath, and Ekron. Now, Ashkelon was a very important city-state and was known for its seaport. It is mentioned in the Samson storyline in Judges 14, verse 19, although less often than Gaza is. A later reference to the markets of Ashkelon, which is in 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 20, attests to that city's status as a very important mercantile center. Now, Ashkelon's neighbor to the north was Ashdod, which is mentioned in the Bible briefly in the account of the capture of the Ark of the Covenant at the Battle of Ebenezer. The Philistines took the Ark all the way to Ashdod, evidenced by about 1050 BC, Ashdod was a major Philistine city-state. According to 1 Samuel verse 5, one of the two temples of Dagon, their god, was at Ashdod. The other, of course, was at Gaza. Considerably less is known about Gath, which may be located at the Tel Esag. They're still not sure if that's the actual town of Gath that they're finding there or not. But Gath's strength and importance are attested by David's vassalage to Achish, the king of Gath. Another story we're going to look at. But Gath was also the hometown, of course, of Goliath and his four brothers. Ekron was in the northernmost part of the Philistine cities, and it was actually controlled the territory that was allotted to the tribe of Dan. Gaza was one of the main cities, and also it was on the coast as well, and this is where Samson died at the temple. In addition to the Pentapolis, two lesser Philistine cities, Ziklag and Timnah, are mentioned in the Bible in 1 Samuel chapter 27 and verse 5. Like the smaller settlements of the Israelite tribes, these smaller Philistine cities are called Hesarim, or villages, or Banoth, which means daughters in the Bible. The other sea peoples, also called by this generic term Philistines, may have controlled some of the cities up in Dan and Ephraim, as we're going to see when we go through the scriptures. Now, the government of the Philistine Pentapolis, as seen in the Bible, has the head of each Philistine city-state as a Sarin. A Sarin. It's spelled S-E-R-E-N, but it's pronounced Sarin. The Hebrew word Sarin is translated as Lord, and it seems to be linguistically related to the Greek tyrannus, or tyrannos, which means tyrant. The Philistine ruler may also have borne the title king, as did King Achish of Gath, or Abimelech, as they adopted this name from the Avites, who they conquered. The limitation on the Sarin's power is reflected in a disagreement that they had between the other princes the Philistine princes, the Serum and Achish, because they wanted to say, could David, who was then fighting for Achish, could he actually take part in a battle against Saul at Gilboa? The Philistine rulers obviously did not have absolute power over the political or military decisions. The five kind of worked in unison together. Now, the Saronim led the armies that were vital to the control of the large civilian population. Each Saron commanded his own army, which consisted of infantry, archers, chariotry, and horsemen. Now, Philistine religious organization and beliefs, as reflected in the Bible, suggest that by the 11th century, the Philistines had already assimilated the main elements of Semitic Canaanite beliefs into their own religion. Biblical evidence gives no trace of a non-Semitic tradition, except the absence of circumcision. Apparently, the Philistines alone among the people in Palestine during this period did not practice circumcision. The term uncircumcised by itself was sometimes used to refer to the Philistines, indicating that all the other peoples in the area must have been circumcised. Now, the head of the Philistine pantheon, their religious system, appears to have been the Canaanite god Dagon, symbol of a fish. It was like a god with a fish tail or whatever. But Dagon, whom they had temples in Gaza and Ashdod, and possibly one at Beth Shan, were dedicated to Dagon. Another god, Beelzebub, had its oracular temple at Ekron. Now, the goddess Ashtoreth apparently also had a temple at Beth Shan, which is mentioned in 1 Samuel chapter 31, verses 8 through 13, if you want to look at that later. That's 1 Samuel chapter 31, verses 8 through 13. Now, the Philistine priests are mentioned only once in the Bible when the Ark of the Eternal is placed in the Temple of Dagon at Ashdod, which is in 1 Samuel 5. One of the few specifically Philistine religious beliefs in the Bible is the guilt offering. The guilt offering, which is a sham. A sham. It's almost, if you add a knee to it, it's like a shame. But it's a sham. And it was they used this offering, and it was sent to the Eternal when the Ark was returned. The guilt offering, of course, was golden mice or rats and golden tumors or boils, which is mentioned in 1 Samuel 6, verse 4. We'll look at that later. In fact, we're going to start looking at that right now. Let's look to some of the scriptures where the Philistines are actually mentioned and the events that occurred as they grew stronger and they began to push up against Israel. So, let's talk about Samson. In Judges chapter 14. Judges chapter 14 and verse 1. Now Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. He went up and told his father and mother, saying, I have seen a woman in Timnah, the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me as a wife. Then his father and mother said to him, is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among my people that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said to his father, get her for me, for she pleases me well. But his father and mother did not know that it was of the Eternal, that he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines. For at that time, the Philistines had dominion over Israel. Now, Samson, he marries this Philistine girl, but then she is threatened by her own people to betray him and to reveal this secret riddle that he gave to them. So she does that, and Samson was upset about this, but even more so when his bride's father actually gives her to another person as wife. Now he wants revenge against the Philistines. So Samson, he went and he caught 300 foxes, but it's more likely that they were jackals, as the Hebrew word could actually mean jackals, and they usually are together in groups, where foxes are mostly alone. So it would have been easier for him to get all these jackals. But what he did is he tied a torch to each pair. He would tie a torch to their tail, so they'd be running, trying to run this way and try to run that way. And he sent them into their fields, and it just burned all the crops down. Now, the Philistines are angry about this, so they go and they kill Samson's wife and father-in-law by burning them. Now, Samson, he's hiding out in a cave. Judges 15 and verse 9. Now, the Philistines went up and camped in Judah and deployed themselves against Lehi, and the men of Judah said, "Why have you come up against us?" So they answered, "We have come up to arrest Samson, to do to him what he has done to us." Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to a cleft in the rock of Etam and said to Samson, "Do you not know that the Philistines rule over us?" They had dominion over the Israeli people. "What is this you have done to us?" And he said to them, "As they did to me, I have done to them." But they said to him, "We have come down to arrest you, that we may deliver you into the hands of the Philistines." And this is exactly what they did. Notice that these were his own countrymen that turned him over to the Philistines. Now, of course, we know Samson was a Danite from the tribe of Dan. Look what tribe turns him over to the Philistine authorities. The tribe of Judah. Just as Jesus would be turned over to the Romans many years later. Again, kind of showing some of the similarities between Samson and Christ. Then the Spirit of the Eternal came mightily upon him, and he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey and killed 1,000 Philistines with it. Now enters Delilah. We know the story. The Philistine sarens, or lords, they persuaded her to discover the secret of his strength. He tells her, and they overpower him and put out his eyes and then send him to prison, where he turns a grinding stone all day. Now, I don't believe that his strength came from his hair. And I don't think he did either. We know that his strength came from God, as well as our strength comes from God. However, he did take a Nazarite vow, and he did violate it from time to time. So God left him. God left him on his own. Verse 20, it says, "But he did not know that the Eternal departed from him." He didn't know. He rose up and thought he was going to have his justice against everybody, but no. Verse 22 says, "However, the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaven." Now, this kind of could mean that Samson, he rededicated himself to God. He realized the error that he made, and in prison, I'm sure that he redeemed himself back to God. And I only say this because of what happens next. In Judges chapter 16, Judges chapter 16 and verse 23, "Now the lords of the Philistines gathered together to offer great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to rejoice. And they said, 'Our God has delivered into our hands Samson, our enemy.' So they said, 'Call for Samson and he can perform for us.' So they bring him out of prison so that he can put him on display. Verse 28, "Then Samson called the Eternal, saying, 'O Eternal God, remember me, I pray. Strengthen me, I pray, just this once. O God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines for my two eyes.' And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars which supported the temple, and he braced himself against them, one on his right and the other on his left. Then Samson said, 'Let me die with the Philistines.' And he pushed with all his might, and the temple fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead he killed at his death were more than he had killed in his life." Sounds incredible. Impossible to the critics who do not honestly believe in the power of God. An interesting thing, though, Bryant G. Wood, a PhD of the Associates for Biblical Research, defends this in an article which says, "Two Philistine temples have been uncovered by archaeologists. One at Tel Quetzal in northern Tel Aviv, and the one in Tel Mink, which is ancient Ekron, which is about 20 miles south of Tel Aviv. Both temples share a unique design. The roof was supported by two central pillars." Two central pillars. "The pillars were made of wood and they rested on stone support bases, with the pillars being about 6 feet apart." 6 feet apart. "A strong man could dislodge them from their stone bases and bring the entire roof crashing down." The archaeological findings match the biblical story perfectly and attest to the plausibility of the account. Now, also, he goes on and says, "Although the Gaza Temple of Dagon has yet to be excavated because the modern city of Gaza City sits on top of it, Wood suggests that the Gaza Temple must have been very similar to the one at Tel Quetzal. The biblical text describes the Gaza Temple as having two pillars supporting the roof, as we just saw there in Judges chapter 16, verse 24. He concludes, "The Bible writer knew his facts. He knew that the Philistine temples were supported by two pillars and that this was how Samson pulled the temple down." So there's archaeology proof that that's how they built their temples. What's interesting about these two sites where these temple ruins were found is that they are both in the territory belonging to the tribe of Dan. Samson's tribe. See, the Danites, after Samson died, they continually fought with the Philistines, and they never really truly took possession of the land that was allocated to them. So some of them eventually, they decided to move north of the Galilean area, and they took over the city of Lash, and they renamed it Dan, because they couldn't even defeat the Philistines. The Philistines moved right in. So now the only Israelite state that was really bordering them was Judah and just a little bit of Ephraim north of the tribe of Dan's territory. So the Philistines, they continue to take more territory. Again, completely taken over the entire allocated tribe of Dan territory. So the next time that we hear about them, they're fighting Israel again, as they are now in the tribe of Ephraim's land at the city of Aphek in the northwest. And that comes as in 1 Samuel chapter 4. In 1 Samuel chapter 4 in verse 1, "And the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out to battle against the Philistines and encamped beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines encamped in Aphek. Then the Philistines put themselves in battle array against Israel. And when they joined battle, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 men in the army of the army in the field. And when the people come into the camp of the elders, the elder says, 'Why has the Eternal defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal from Shiloh to us, that when it comes among us, it may save us from the hand of our enemies.'" So that's what they do. They bring the Ark of the Covenant, hoping that by some miracle they will win the battle. But they lost. They lost the battle. And Eli's two sons died in that battle as well, the ones that brought the Ark. But worse yet was that the Philistines captured the Ark of the Covenant. When Eli hears of it, he falls over and dies. Now Eli was a priest who judged Israel for 40 years. 1 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 1. 1 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 1. "Then the Philistines took the Ark of God and brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. When the Philistines took the Ark of God, they brought it into the house of Dagon, and they set it by Dagon." So they set it right in front of the statue of Dagon that they worshipped. "And when the people of Ashdod rose early in the morning, there was Dagon fallen on his face to the earth before the Ark of the Eternal. So they took Dagon and they set it back in his place again. And when they rose early the next morning, there was Dagon fallen on his face to the ground before the Ark of the Eternal. The head of Dagon and both the palms of his hands were broken off on the threshold. Only Dagon's torso was left of it." It's interesting that God, in a sense, made their God bow down to him twice. Verse 6, "But the hand of the Eternal was heavy on the people of Ashdod, and he ravaged them and struck them with tumors, both Ashdod and its territories." Now the King James Version says it smote them with emerods, and the Orthodox Jewish Bible says struck them with tekorim, or tumors. Other translations actually mention that these tumors or boils occurred in the private parts, namely the buttocks, having some scholars actually believe that they might have been hemorrhoids. Now the living Bible says in verse 6, says, "Then the Eternal began to destroy the people of Ashdod and the nearby villages with bubonic plague." So why did they say that? Well, the reason for this translation is used is because when the Philistines send the Ark back, because they all were getting infected with this, they sent 5 tumor-shaped pieces and 5 mice or rat-shaped pieces, all made of gold, with them as that offering. The bubonic plague was the Black Death of the Middle Ages, and it's characterized by the formation of buboes, inflammatory swellings of the lymph glands, especially in the groin area. And that plague was actually spread by the fleas of rodents, particularly rats. So this may have been what the Philistines were actually suffering from. Whatever it was, they couldn't wait to get rid of the Ark of the Covenant. But they sent it down to Gath and then to Ekron. And before actually sending it back to Israel, and all those towns were afflicted with this horrible disease, which was very uncomfortable, according to what some other scriptures say and other translations. So now Eli is dead, so Samuel takes place as judge of Israel and actually becomes the last judge of Israel. And 20 years go by, and they are still being attacked by the Philistines, and the people are crying out to God. So in 1 Samuel chapter 7, verse 3, then Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel, saying, if you return to the Eternal with all your hearts and put away the foreign gods and the Ashtoreth from among you and prepare your hearts for the Eternal and serve him only, he will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines. So the children of Israel put away the Baals and the Ashtoreth and served the Eternal only. And Samuel said, gather all Israel to Mizpah, and I will pray to the Eternal for you. So they gathered together at Mizpah, drew water, and poured it out before the Eternal. And they fasted that day. And they said there, we have sinned against the Eternal. They confessed their sin. And Samuel judged the children of Israel at Mizpah. Then Samuel, he goes ahead and he offers a lamb to God. Then Samuel cried out to the Eternal for Israel, and the Eternal answered him. Verse 10. Now Samuel was offering up the burnt offering. The Philistines drew near to battle against Israel. But the Eternal thundered with a loud thunder upon the Philistines that day, and so confused them that they were overcome before Israel. Verse 13. So the Philistines were subdued, and they did not come any more into the territory of Israel. And the hand of the Eternal was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. Then the cities which the Philistines had taken from Israel were restored to Israel from Ekron to Gath. And Israel recovered its territory from the hands of the Philistines. End of story. Happy ending. Not quite. Samuel grows old. He sends his sons out to be judges for God, but they're not for God. They're doing the wrong thing, so they're not fit to be judges. So that's why Samuel was the last judge. So the people are upset about that. What are we going to do? Samuel's going to die. His sons can't take over. So they demanded a king. They wanted a king. So Saul is anointed king. And the Philistines are back. But now they're in the territory belonging to the tribe of Benjamin. That's Saul's tribe. King Saul, he takes over, and what does he get? He gets the Philistines in his backyard. And this area of Benjamin was actually just a little bit north of Jerusalem. Now Saul takes over a very weak kingdom, and he builds a very small army of only 3,000 soldiers. I know that sounds like a lot, but it's not when you're going up against the Philistines. And there's more to that too, as you'll hear here in a minute. His son Jonathan, well, he strikes out at the Philistines in their land, because he was upset they were in their land. So he actually strikes out at them and attacks one of their garrisons, and he starts a war. In 1 Samuel chapter 13 is when he does this. Now verse 19, it shows the influence and the power that the Philistines actually had over Israel. Verse 19 says, "Now there was no blacksmith to be found throughout the land of Israel. For the Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make swords or spears." So they didn't even have weapons. Jonathan and King Saul were the only ones with a sword. Everybody else was just farm instruments or whatever they can get their hands on. Because that's what the Philistines did. They made sure they took all their weapons away. Now King Saul's Jonathan, well, he gets a little restless. And he decides to test the Philistine garrison in Michmash. In 1 Samuel chapter 14 is the account. 1 Samuel chapter 14 and verse 1. "Now it happened one day that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who bore his armor, 'Come, let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that's on the other side.' But he did not tell his father." Now I want you to listen to this description of this area here. Very detailed. In verse 4, "Between the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over the Philistines' garrison, there was a sharp rock on one side and a sharp rock on the other side. And the name of the one was Bozez, and the name of the other was Shina. The front one faced northward opposite Michmash, and the other southward opposite Gibeah. Then Jonathan said to his young man who bore his armor, 'Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Eternal will work for us.'" He didn't have no guarantee. He just thought maybe God would be working for him. "For nothing restrains the Eternal from saving by many or by few." Then Jonathan said, "Very well, let us cross over to these men," in verse 8, "and we will show ourselves to them. If they say thus to us, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place and not go up to them. But if they say thus, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up, for the Eternal has delivered them into our hand, and this will be a sign to us." So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, "Look, the Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden." Making fun of them. Then the men of the garrison called to Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come up to us and we will show you something." "Come up to us, we'll show you something." Jonathan said to his arm bearer, "Come up after me, for the Eternal has delivered them into the hand of Israel." So they actually go and they successfully kill 20 Philistine soldiers in a very short time, which actually sends the rest of the camp, the Philistine camp, into confusion and panic. Now the Philistines are out there running about all over the place, and Saul, who's camped nearby with his army, he sees this. So, you know, he checks to see who's missing. "Oh, my son Jonathan's missing in his arm. So he must have started this." So Saul goes out and attacks with his army and actually sends the Philistines running back home, running southward. But this was, you know, it was a really great victory for them. But this was only the beginning, as verse 25 says, "Now there was fierce war with the Philistines all the days of Saul." All the days of Saul, he was fighting with the Philistines. Now recall those details that were mentioned about the cliffs of Michmash in the Bible. I mentioned this in a sermon I gave a few years ago on Veterans Day. So being Memorial Day weekend, I'm going to recount that story briefly here. In 1917, General Allenby, along with the 60th British Division, entered the plain en route to attack Jericho and drive the Turkish army back across the Jordan River. This was all in World War I. Directly in their path was the small town of Michmash, which was located on a high rock high rocky hill overlooking the plain of Megiddo, also occupied by the Turks. It was impregnable with its sheer cliffs. The British forces were faced with a problem. How on earth are they going to penetrate this town? Well, one night, he is wakened by one of his officers, Major Vivian Gilbert. See, Major Gilbert had remembered something about the town of Mishmash in the Bible and had looked it up. And he found that the town was once a site of a great battle between the Philistines and the Israelites. And he found in the 14th chapter of 1 Samuel, it's how Jonathan, his armor bearer, they crept up the rocky crag between a secret passage between two rocks, Bozez and Shina, by night and suddenly attacked the Philistines. Well, they decided to imitate the attack described in the Bible. On the night of February 18th, 1918, General Allenby sent one company of soldiers up by the secret pass under the cover of night. As the biblical account, the army was thrown into confusion. They were completely routed by the Allies. The fortress of Mishmash was captured, and then later the entire land of Israel was captured in World War I because it was so descriptive. They actually saw the same two rocks that were right there. So they won that battle because of an account in the Bible. Now in 1 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 1 says, "Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle, and were gathered at Socoh, which belongs to Judah. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up a battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and the Israelites stood on the mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath, from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span." That's 9 feet, 9 inches. 9 feet, 9 inches tall. Now that's a giant. As you may recall, when Moses sent the spies into the Promised Land, they gave a report of the descendants of Anak, who were very tall. They were giants. And of course, Joshua was one of those spies. So he dealt with them in the conquest of the land. It's mentioned in Joshua chapter 11 and verse 21. Joshua chapter 11 and verse 21. "And at that time Joshua came and cut off the Anakim from the mountains, from Hebron to Debri to Anab and all the mountains of Judah and from all the mountains of Israel. Joshua utterly destroyed them with their cities. None of the Anakim were left in the land of the children of Israel. They remained only in Gaza, in Gath, and in Ashdod." So some of the giants were still there in those which would become the Philistinian towns. So he didn't get them all. Some remained in these towns, which were conquered by the Philistines and actually came over under their rules and became Philistines themselves. Now for 40 days, Goliath would come before the Israelite army both morning and in the evening and ask for a champion to face him in battle. None accepted. Now David heard the words of Goliath one day when he was there bringing some supplies from home because three of his brothers were in the army of Saul's. So he heard this, and David was truly upset with the taunting that Goliath was saying to them. So in verse 26, David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God. Verse 45, then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with sword and with spear and with javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Eternal of Hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Eternal will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth. And all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Eternal does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Eternal's, and he will give you into our hands. Now David ain't boasting here. David has confidence in God. He's dealt with bears and lions trying to attack the sheep, and God's always protected him and helped him to be able to defeat them. And he looks at Goliath as just another beast in the way. He had faith that God would give him the victory. And of course we know he did. He defeated them and they chased the Philistines away once again. Now the next recorded account of the Philistines is later when David is on the run from King Saul. And he goes to the Philistinian city of Gath. That's right, Gath, Goliath's hometown. Well, the king there, he recognized him, and David, he pretends like he's insane, and just to be able to get out of there alive. David later would write a psalm about it. Psalm 34, in fact. If you look at Psalm 34, you don't have to turn there, but if you look at it later, it has the title, A Psalm of David When He Pretended Madness Before Abimelech, Who Drove Him Away and He Departed. That title again shows that the kings of the Philistine towns were also called Abimelech. But the king of Gath's name was actually Achish. Now in 1 Samuel chapter 23, God tells David to save the city of Keilah from the Philistines, and he goes and he does that. Now, here's a strange thing that happens. David actually goes back to Gath. He already fled there once, pretending he was mad. Now he goes back there. And this is his explanation of why. In 1 Samuel chapter 27 and verse 1, and David said in his heart, now I shall perish someday by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than I should speedily escape to the land of the Philistines, and Saul will despair of me to seek me any more in any part of Israel. So I shall escape out of his hand. Then David arose, and he went over with 600 men who were with him to Achish, the son of Maok, the king of Gath. So David dwelt with Achish at Gath. For 16 months he stayed there, until the other Philistine lords found out about it, because they were going up to fight against Saul, and they questioned David's loyalty. So Achish told him, you remain behind. He was not welcome. So he stayed back there in the town of Ziklag, which is a town that Achish had gave him. So he remained there while the rest of the Philistines went off to battle with Saul again. In 1 Samuel chapter 31, the Philistines finally defeat Saul and his three sons at that Mount Gilboa, the one that David didn't go with them. Now, Saul's dead. David is now king. And at first he struggles a little bit just to get all of Israel together under one roof. But he does. And then he goes ahead and he captures Jerusalem from the Jebusites, and making that as the capital of Israel. And he also called it the City of David. So now David is king of Israel. Guess what he's got to deal with? the Philistines. 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 7. Now when the Philistines heard that they anointed David king over Israel, all the Philistines went up to search for David. And David heard of it, and he went down to the stronghold. The Philistines also went and deployed themselves in the valley of Rephaim. So David inquired of the Eternal. Here's the key thing. David inquired of the Eternal. See, Saul did a lot of things without getting the advice. Sometimes he didn't even wait for Samuel to show up. Made his own sacrifices. David's a little bit smarter than this. David reached out and inquired of the Eternal God, saying, "Shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you deliver them into my hand?" And the Eternal said to David, "Go up, for I will doubtless deliver the Philistines into your hand." So David went to Baal-perazim, and David defeated them there. And he said, "The Eternal has broken through my enemies before me like a breakthrough of water." Therefore he called the name of that place Baal-perazim. And they left their images there, and David and his men carried them away. So they had their some images probably of their god there, so they removed them. Then the Philistines went up again and deployed themselves in the valley of Rephaim. Therefore David inquired of the Eternal and said, "You shall not go up. Circle around behind them and come up upon them in the front of the mulberry trees. And it shall be when you hear the sound of marching in the tops of the mulberry trees, then you shall quickly advance quickly. For then the Eternal will go out before you and strike the camp of the Philistines." And David did so. He followed God's instructions. God gave him direct instructions and he followed them to the T. So David did so as the Eternal commanded him, and he drove back the Philistines from Geba as far as Gezer. Now at other times, David has to deal with them again. In 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 1, it says, "After this it came to pass that David attacked the Philistines and subdued them. And David took Metheg Ammon from the hand of the Philistines." Again in 2 Samuel chapter 21 and verse 15, "When the Philistines were at war again with Israel, David and his servants with him went down and fought against the Philistines, and David grew faint. Then Ishbi Benob, who was one of the sons of the giant, the weight of whose bronze spear was 300 shekels, who was bearing a new sword, thought he could kill David. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to his aid and struck the Philistine and killed him. Then the men of David swore to him, saying, 'You shall go out no more with us to battle, lest you quench the lamp of Israel.'" He's getting older, so they wanted to defend David. They didn't want to see him die. Now it happened afterward that there again was a battle with the Philistines at Gob. And Sabetchi, the Hushathite, killed Seth, who was one of the sons of the giant. So here's another giant. Two down. Two more to go. These might have been the brothers of Goliath. Again, there was war at Gob with the Philistines, where Ehanah, the son of Jerahoregim, the Bethlehemite, killed the brother of Goliath. And here it is. Now it is saying it is the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, and the shaft whose spear was like a weaver's beam. And yet there was war at Gath, where there was a man of great stature who had six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot, 24 in number. And he also was born to the giant. So when he defiled Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, killed him. These four were born to the giant in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. I truly believe that these were the other four brothers of Goliath. As you recall, my son gave a sermon about why David picked up five stones, because there was five brothers, just in case the others showed up. Well, now all five brothers, the giants, are dead. After this account, the Philistines are not mentioned many more times in Scripture. However, they do remain a thorn in the side of the nation of Judah after the split, after Israel split from them. There's a few more accounts, and during King Uzziah's reign in Judah, they surfaced again. The incident is in 2 Chronicles chapter 26 and verse 6. It says, "Now he went out and made war against the Philistines and broke down the wall of Gath, the wall of Jabnon, and the wall of Ashdod. And he built cities around Ashdod and among the Philistines. God helped him against the Philistines." Once again, you have a good king, and God helps him against the Philistines. Also, during the reign of Ahaz in Judah, this is in 2 Chronicles chapter 28 and verse 8. So the Philistines also invaded the cities of the lowland and of the south of Judah, and had taken Beth Shemesh, Ajalon, Gederoth, Sokol with its villages, Timnah with its villages, and Gizmol with its villages, and they dwelt there. See, they already were defeated up in the territory of Dan and up in the north, so now they were kind of just going over to the east a little bit, trying to just take some of the southern part of Judah. The last mention of them is when King Hezekiah reigned in Judah. In 2 Kings chapter 18 and verse 8, he subdued the Philistines as far as Gaza in his territory from the watchtower to the fortified city. Now Gaza was the furthest southern city of the Philistines. Now they had pushed them all the way down to Gaza. The Philistines disappear from written history during the 6th century BC when the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar conquered Judah and the surrounding region, destroying several cities, which is mentioned. Ascalon was one of them. So what happened to them is a mystery. They were most likely captured by the Babylonians and mingled with others and entirely lost their identity, if any of them even survived. It's interesting that that's the same thing that happened to the 10 northern tribes of Israel when they were conquered by Assyria, that they kind of lost their identity of who they were. Yeah, they kept some of the same traditions and traits, but ultimately they forsook God for other gods. But the Philistines disappear. No more. So what is the lasting legacy of the Philistines? Well, one of the definitions of Philistine in many dictionaries is a person regarded as smugly narrow and conventional in views and taste, lacking and indifferent to cultural and aesthetic values. It's also it's kind of used as a noun or an adjective about certain people, legacy of their name. The other description is a member of a non-Semitic people that lived in Philistia. Now, what's interesting, the word Palestine derives from Philistia, which is a name given by the Greek writers to the land of the Philistines. The name was revived by the Romans in the 2nd century, and it made its way into Arabic, where it has been used to describe the region at least since the earliest Islamic era. After Roman times, the name had no official status until after World War I. Again, like I said, with General Allenby, and they defeated Israel from the Turks, from the Ottoman Empire, and they took control of it. So at the end of that rule, it was adopted as one of the regions that was actually given to Great Britain under their control, and it became known as Palestine. Now, the ancient kingdom of Israel was named Palestine now. The Arabs that dwelt there became known as Palestinians, but are not related to the Philistines of the past. They took on that name because that's where they lived. Now, once again, the land is known as Israel. And as of recent weeks, we can see that the Jews are still in conflict with those living in the Gaza Strip. Only the return of Jesus Christ will this issue ever be resolved. So I hope this gave you a little bit better understanding of who the Philistines were. They were conquerors from the Sea Peoples who went up against the chosen peoples of God. And they lost because they went up against God, the Eternal, the one true God. If it weren't for the Bible, people would not even know the existence of the Philistines. Because, like I said, it's mentioned very sparingly in history, in just a few Egyptian documents that have been found more recently than in the past. So if it wasn't for the Bible, we wouldn't even know who these people were. And most of the things we know about them is from the Bible. So I hope this was informative for you and you got something out of that.